Welcome back to Innovation Hub. I'm Kara Miller. We've all met parents who will tell you their toddler is a genius. Look how she can count, or color inside the lines, or hit keys on the piano. And you're kind of puzzled because the kid's got paint on her face and a glue stick up her nose. But those crazy parents may actually be on to something. Allison Gopnik has spent years researching why kids are smarter than we think and what they can teach us. She's a professor at UC Berkeley. Allison, thanks for joining me.
Well, great to talk to you.
So you have been studying babies for a long time. Tell me a little bit about the current research that you're doing.
Well, one of the things that we discovered somewhat accidentally was that in some circumstances, very young children, 3 and 4 year olds, even in some ways 18 month olds, seem to be solving some kinds of problems better than adults are. And the background for this is that we've been studying how children figure out what causes what, how things work out in the world, which of course is something that's very important for innovation and technology. And what we've discovered is that they unconsciously use a lot of the same kinds of techniques that very powerful machine learning algorithms use and that scientists use. Things
wow.
like forming hypotheses, looking at a statistical pattern of data and seeing how the data supports or doesn't support the hypothesis. And we've actually collaborated with people in computer science who are trying to design machine learning programs that can do things like look at out at the world and make sense out of it. Now, there's no program known to man that is even in the same ballpark as every 2-year-old in terms of being able to learn. So we're trying to figure out what's going on in their heads that makes them such great learners. And in the course of doing that, we discovered that in some cases, the children are actually doing a better job of learning how the world works from evidence and data than grown-ups are.
How do you do research on people who sometimes don't talk or, you know, even if they can't really tell you what's going on in a very descriptive way? How do you figure out the sort of deep imaginative stuff that's going on? You mentioned kids being like computers. How do you know that?
That's a great question. And even 30 years ago, if you'd asked most scientists, they would have said that children are irrational and they can't understand cause and effect and they're egocentric. And all of that has turned out to be wrong. And the reason is exactly because, you know, if you give a 9-month-old a 4-part questionnaire to fill out, they're not going to seem very smart. And even if you ask a 3-year-old what they think about something, you're likely to get a beautiful stream of consciousness poem about ponies and birthdays, but not anything that sounds like it's very rational. So we had to figure out how to ask children what they thought in their language instead of our language. And one really good way of doing that is to see what children do instead of what they say. So, for example, in the experiments that I was telling you about where the children seem to be smarter than grown-ups and where children seem to be doing amazing kinds of statistical analyses of data, here's how we do the experiments. We have a little box that we call the Blicket detector, and it's a little box that lights up and plays music sometimes and not others, and when you put some things on it and not other things. And what we can do is actually show the children in real life with a real object, look, I put these 3 blocks on and the machine played music, but then I put this one on and it didn't play music, and then I took one of them off and it didn't play music. And then at the end of the day, what we can do is simply ask the children, all right, here's a bunch of blocks, make the machine go, and we can see what they do. Now, it might look as if it's just kids playing with a toy, and it is just kids playing with a toy. But when you analyze it more closely, you can see that what's going on is really quite sophisticated, and we can use just the curiosity of children, their impulse to do something like play with a toy or figure it out, find out how it works.
And when they figure it out, have you ever just thought, wow, I totally thought this was going to be too hard?
Like every single day. So this is kind of a joke, is the absolutely standard thing that happens in my lab is this is the equivalent of preschoolers in science is graduate students. So they kind of get back to that creative place. And I would say every month in my lab, one of the graduate students says, well, why don't we try this with the kids? And I say, oh, come on, 3-year-olds, they're not going to be able to do that. The most recent study that we published, one of the most recent studies that we published, we started out. And I said, well, let's try it with 5-year-olds. And they could do it. And then 4-year-olds. And then 3-year-olds. And each time the graduate students would say, well, let's just try it now with the 18-month-olds. And I'd say, oh, come on, they can't do that. And in this case, it turned out the 18-month-olds actually could solve this extremely hard problem that we would have thought that only grown-ups could solve. And other people have done this now with 7-month-olds with even newborn babies. And with the baby babies, with the younger babies, what we do is look not only at what they do, like what choices they make, but also things like what they look at, where their eyes are moving,
right,
so that we can use all that information to find out just how incredibly smart they are. And I think the conclusion is that they are much smarter than anybody would have thought, including me.
Well, you see kids playing and they become immersed in a way that, you know, most adults usually aren't immersed in, you know, looking at a pile of change or looking at a table full of sand. I mean, I do see grownups that immersed in video games sometimes or movies, but it takes a lot of stimulus, right, for the grownup to be that engaged. Do we know what is it about kids that can make them sort of almost disappear into a really, really simple setup, like a few sticks or some dirt or whatever?
Right. Well, what we have increasingly discovered is that when children are just playing around, what they're really doing is doing experiments. Those things that we take for granted, like how sand works. Think about it as if you were a Martian seeing sand for the first time.
Right.
It's bizarre, right? You know, you pick it up. Sometimes it's solid. Sometimes it isn't. And a child in the sandbox is really starting to figure out, actually trying to do experiments and solve problems about how everyday things like sand and water and the people around them work that as grown-ups we simply take for granted. And there's some evidence that even children's brains are more flexible, more what neuroscientists call plastic, than adult brains. And what seems to happen with development is that the kind of pathways that work, the things that we do that are successful, those become more and more automatic and efficient. We do them better and better and more quickly and often without even thinking about them. But we become less flexible. We're less able to shift out of those pathways and think of something new, think of something that we haven't thought about before. If you think of the children as scientists, moms and dads are really the National Science Foundation. We're really the funding agency that's there to take care of these crazy explorers and make sure that they can have the resources that they need to do their kind of exploration. We're not really there to dictate what they should do.
We give them the food and then they run on that and do their scientific experiments.
Well, one of the things that's really interesting is that human beings have a much, much longer period of childhood than any other species. There's really good evidence that in our evolution, one of the things that happened most distinctively and most quickly was the fact that we developed this really long childhood. And it seems sort of paradoxical, right? I mean, babies are not only useless, they're sort of worse than useless because we have to put so much time and energy into taking care of them, much more than a chimpanzee or a gorilla would have to put into taking care of a baby. Why on earth would that be? And at least one idea is that that protected period is just what we need to be able to do the kind of exploration that we can do. When we actually have done our recent experiments, what we found is that the situations in which the children are outperforming the adults are when you give them, say, a gadget to figure out that works in an unusual or unexpected way, not the way that we usually would think. If we give, say, a four-year-old and a Berkeley undergraduate the same kind of evidence about how the machine works, and the answer to the question is it works in an unusual way, adults tend to stick to their initial assumptions about how the machine could work. They're not as good at switching and thinking, wait a minute, maybe the way I thought about this originally isn't really the right way. Maybe I should think about it this other way. And four-year-olds actually seem to be quite substantially better at doing that.
It makes me think of how people talk about kids are better at learning languages, maybe because different languages have different systems and kids haven't sort of committed to a system yet.
Well, there's two hypotheses that we have about why this could be happening. And we found it in several different studies looking at different ages and different kinds of problems that children are solving. One possibility is that just the fact that children know less gives them an advantage in learning more. As you develop more and more confidence in your beliefs about the world, it's rational to leave those beliefs alone, not change them, to require more and more evidence before you're willing to give those beliefs up. The other possibility, and I think the neuroscience kind of supports this second possibility, is that there may be just something about what it's like to be a baby or a young child that intrinsically makes children's brains more flexible and makes them able to search through more possibilities. And that would fit with this evolutionary picture that that's really what children are designed for. They're really designed to be able to have this kind of wide-ranging learning. And again, I think anybody who's seen recently, a lot of us have had the experience of seeing a two-year-old with an iPhone and and my two-year-old grandson, without being able to read the instruction manual, figured out somehow how to get to Thomas the Tank Engine on Netflix from the home screen all by himself.
My two-year-old daughter can turn on the TV, and she also does love phones. Yeah, it's amazing.
So that may be part of the way that children are designed. So something I say sometimes is you could think about children as being like the research and development division of the human species, and we grown-ups are production and marketing. They're the blue sky guys who can, you know, live in their protected world of beanbag chairs and ping pong tables and think up a million new ideas. And they can do that because we're there to actually decide, okay, which of those ideas are good and which ones aren't, and take that wide-ranging learning and actually use it to do all the things that, from an evolutionary perspective, we have to do as grown-ups, including taking care of the next generation of children.
Does that tell you anything about really creative adults, sort of people who are a little bit unusual, maybe sort of don't follow the system? In your mind, are those people more like children?
Well, that's exactly something that we're looking at right now. So there's a little bit of evidence that when you see grown-ups behaving in ways that we think of as being creative, then in some ways their brains are looking more like the brains of children. There's actually fairly amazing experiments in which what you can do is actually pass a current through somebody's brain, and it doesn't cause any damage, but it temporarily disrupts a part of their brain. And we know that the frontal part of the brain, that's sort of the chief executive office of the brain, that's very involved in this kind of control and planning and executive ability that we have as adults. And it's really important for being able to go out in the world and do things effectively. It turns out, though, that if you disrupt that part of the brain, and then you give people a kind of creativity task, like think up as many new uses for a Kleenex as you possibly could, that actually they do better on those kinds of problems. They think up more different ideas than they do if that wonderful executive part of their brain is fully operational. So in some ways, there's a little evidence that when we kind of turn adults into a more childlike state, even though they're worse at doing a lot of things, they might be better at these kinds of creativity tasks. And that's something that we're actually exploring at the moment.
Does that tell you anything about how you teach kids? You know, how as kids are getting older, you teach them to be creative, because that's something that's, you know, people talk about often missing from schools. We have, you know, a lot of test-driven outcomes, but creativity is important too.
Exactly. One of the problems is that the kinds of things that are supporting this creativity and innovation, an obvious one is play, are exactly the sort of things that are the hardest to assess. There's this kind of catch-22. You know, if you're thinking about this kind of goal-directed exploit abilities, the ability to actually do something that you're supposed to do, that's exactly the sort of thing that's really easy to test, because you can say, all right, here's something to do, and now do it. The ability to do something that's not the thing that the person expected you to do, it's very hard to assess that. And I think there's a lot of concern among developmental psychologists that, especially when you look at preschoolers, preschoolers are really the people who are at their absolute height of broad thinking and creativity, that there's more and more pressure to try and make those preschools more and more like schools, which means damping down exactly the abilities that we are going to need most in the future world. You know, one of the other interesting evolutionary ideas is that it seems that the trigger for, you know, what was it that happened in our environment that led us to have this extended period of childhood?
Right.
And the most common idea now is that it was the fact that our environment got very unpredictable. So instead of thinking about human-caused climate change, this was climate change-caused humans. So the climate actually changed so that we couldn't predict what our environment was going to be. And of course, as we moved out across the planet, our environment became more and more unpredictable. And in a situation like that, this kind of exploration becomes especially valuable. And I think that that's going to increasingly be the environment in which we find ourselves as adults. So variability, exploration, play, those are the things that let us deal with changing circumstances.
Allison Gopnik is a psychology professor at the University of California, Berkeley. Thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me.
Hey girl in the strobing light, what your mama never told ya. Mama never told ya. If love hurts when you do it right, you can cry when you get older.
Thanks to the people who worked on this show with childlike enthusiasm. Producer Mary Dew, production assistant Genevieve Gilson, and engineer Alan Mattis. You can always check out our conversations on iTunes and SoundCloud. And a warm welcome to our newest listeners at WNYC in New York. We want to hear your thoughts, so drop us a note anytime and suggest stories you'd like to hear. innovationhub@wgbh.org. From PRI and WGBH Radio, I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub.
PRI, Public Radio International.